Welcome to the Game AFL Podcast, a weekly hit of the best football analysis from the West Australian and the Sunday Times, where the footy never stops. This is the game.
Well, good afternoon, listeners. My name is Mark Duffield. I'm the senior football writer of the West Australian. I have next to me Glenn Quartermain, the anti-Essendon sports editor of the Sunday Times.
That's not fair.
Come on, mate. Come on. We've got a question in front of us. Going to confirm your bias. Come on.
No, I love Essendon. I think it's a fairy tale story of the season. That's unfair.
You're listening to the midweek wash-up between the first and second rounds.
Well, I've never been back to Windy Hill, I can tell you.
Well, why would you? Oh, jeepers.
I got a parking ticket. The last time I was at Windy Hill, I got an $80 parking ticket. And some little idiot stole my tape recorder, so I didn't have the coach's comments after the game. I had a horrible day.
Let me finish the introduction.
Sorry, Glenn. Sorry, mate.
You are listening to the midweek wash-up between the first and second weeks of the 2017 AFL final series and quarters. The players have voted.
They have. Dusty.
Dustin Martin is the best player in the AFL in 2017.
I don't think there's too many people who would dispute that. It's either Danger or Dusty, and I think both would be worthy recipients, but I think Dusty got it in the end. There's a discrepancy in the votes, 1333 to 776, but that's because obviously most gave him the three and gave Danger the two, but every player votes on it. So I think they got that pretty well right. I don't think too many people would dispute it.
And most gave Josh Kelly one, by the look of it, too.
Yeah, which is, so I think we all agree that you can split Martin and Dangerfield, but Josh Kelly's probably the third, and maybe Tom Mitchell fourth, but that's up to debate, too.
And I had to get a Hawthorn player somewhere.
Slipped it in, do you like that?
Yeah. And Andrew McGrath was voted the best first-year player.
Again, Sam Powell-Pepper, two, and Sam Prochaska-Seaton, three. So, again, we've debated this before with a rising star. I probably got that one round the wrong way.
Yeah, I'd have to agree to disagree with him on that. And I think the performances in the first week of finals bore that out. I thought Powell-Pepper was in Port Adelaide's best in their narrow loss to West Coast.
And among the other recipients were Captain of the Year to Taylor Walker, and wouldn't dispute that, but I would throw up Shannon Hearn's name as well, because I think his second half of the season has been outstanding and he showed great leadership again at the weekend.
Yeah, I'd throw Trent Cotchin in there too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think Trent Cotchin's leadership and his leadership on Friday night in the game against Geelong was...
How good was that goal?
That was one of the goals of the year.
It wasn't it? The little pivot, the little spin, and then slams it on.
I'd like to give him 10 goes at it and see how many he kicks.
Yeah, I reckon he'd kick seven of them.
Seven?
Pretty talented.
It was a great goal and a great win by the Tigers. Now, let's talk about the controversial free kick at the end of the elimination final, the one that delivered Luke Shuey the free that delivered the goal that put West Coast into the semi-final against GWS this week. The AFL signed off on that free kick,
yep,
paid by Chris Donlan, I think.
As they should have signed off on it.
And now he's been dropped.
Can't figure that one out. What message is that sending? Everything else he did in that game no good?
The message that they're sending is that he got it wrong, even though they publicly said he got it right.
Yeah,
and quarters, I'm predicting that had he not paid the free kick, the AFL would have signed off on it and said, no, that's not a free kick. That's the one we don't want paid.
Yeah. Look, I'm not sure. What if it was at the other end and it was Ports? I mean, there would be an uproar if it wasn't paid.
There's an uproar either way on these, because where we are is in transition. So when I saw that in real time, I thought that's a free. And when I saw it in slow motion, I saw that it was Luke Shuey doing what Luke Shuey does. I thought that's the one they don't want paid. But I still wasn't sure that it wasn't a free kick, because I think that next year that won't be a free kick. Well, last year that was a free kick, but this year, sometimes that's been a free kick and sometimes
it hasn't. So how can you not award it? Because from what I saw, it was a clumsy tackle and the arm was around the neck. Now, I know the argument is it started lower and the raising of the arm helped it on its way, but I still think it was a clumsy tackle. For me, it was a free kick. But if they want to make it clear, don't pay it at all next year. Just don't pay it. And it's like the out of bounds we saw with Andrew Gaff. There's too many grey areas at the moment, and we need to get them right. And we say this every year, and they just don't get them right.
Well, I think they ask a lot of umpires, don't they?
Way too much of umpires. And, you know, you look at that, and it's extra time. People talk about the players with extra time. It's also the umpires out there in extra time.
Absolutely.
They're fatigued as much as anyone, probably more. So, you know, I really do think we ask too much of umpires at stages, and the AFL need to help them.
No, I absolutely agree with that. I think that the game was hard enough to umpire 10 years ago, and it's just gotten tougher and tougher and tougher because every year they change an interpretation. And I think that the other thing that happens is when they change these interpretations, they have to work out how hard it is going to be for an umpire to pay at a crunch period in a game. Because we know what happens in crunch periods in games. The umpires put the whistle away. So hands in the back where there's no effect on a marking contest won't get paid in the last 5 minutes of a game.
Yep. So why should that be different to how it's interpreted in the first 5 minutes of the game? See, I find that
it's
ridiculous.
It's human nature.
Yeah, well, I find it ridiculous.
It's human nature. Yeah. Umpires don't like to pay. They don't like to interfere late in close games. I think that's just human nature. I think that I was an umpire, I wouldn't want to pay something unless I was 100% sure. And it was interesting.
Don't pay it in the first 5 minutes then.
Well, then you get no rules, don't you? I think that watching the Shuey free kick, the umpire that paid it, Chris Donlan, was right between where I was sitting in the press box and where the incident took place. He took a long time to put his whistle to his mouth, and I sensed a great reluctance on him to pay the free kick. Yep. And in the end, he's decided what you decided, that because the arm finished up around the neck, it had to be a free kick.
We should point out, this is done at lightning speed, and we've had obviously a week to look at it and mull over it and look at it 50 times. That's probably how many times I've seen it. So.
Yep.
The thing that I guess disappoints me about the week, and they're debates we have to have, so that's fine, is that, and we've said this before, Charlie Dixon, for mine, was best on ground at the end of regular time. That's for my opinion. He was best on ground at the end of regular time. Misses two shots that would have won Port the game in extra time. I guess the thing that I'm disappointed about, that I hope we don't remember this incident just for the tackle, because it's been pretty quickly forgotten in it all, that Luke Shuey has gone back and kicked one of the great pressure goals.
Yeah, and not just Luke Shuey, Josh Kennedy as well.
Josh Kennedy, and wasn't it funny how it was converse? It was Charlie Dixon, great for the regular time, didn't get it done in extra time, and Josh Kennedy probably well held by Cleary up to regular time, but stood up, kicked two when it counted in extra time. So
yeah, I think I wrote in my match report on this one that this game was about moments, and even someone like Lewis Jetta, who had no influence on the game in regular time, he had those two or three clearances late in the first segment of extra time that got, I think, went Port at edge 13 points clear. Jetta influenced the game and changed the course of the game. Kennedy managed to soccer one through. Then he kicked another one after the change of ends. It was a game of moments.
I wasn't real keen on Mark Williams Choco coming out. We love Choco, but wasn't really keen on him coming out saying he felt sick in the guts about that whole thing. I just don't think he gave enough credit to Shuey, again, going back and kicking that goal. Because what a marvellous achievement.
Luke Shuey, I'm a massive Luke Shuey fan, and I think he's probably the most highly skilled player at West Coast. When you look at his full skill set, both sides of the body, he's got power, he can step out of tackles, he can kick goals. But when you're a serial offender, which he is...
There's a few of them, though.
Well, yeah, there is, but they all get booed, Glenn. Everyone notices, and they're like, you know, opposition fans don't cheer when Joel Selwood bravely goes low in a tackle and gets a free kick.
That's true.
And Luke Shuey is in the Joel Selwood bracket. He understands how to do this. And for 3 or 4 years there, he was getting free kick after free kick after free kick for doing it.
It's tough out there, mate. It's tough out there. And if you can get away with it, get away with it.
He gets full credit for going back and kicking the goal, but there will be a price to pay for Luke Shuey. And when football gets to a point where these free kicks aren't paid, I'm tipping Luke Shuey won't get much from the umpires. In the same way that Michael Walters from Fremantle didn't get much for 2 years when they realised he was ducking his head.
Yep.
I think that umpires will remember that moment at Adelaide Oval and they will say, well, Luke Shuey shrugs, tackles high.
Well, I have no problem with that as long as it's consistent, because we have not had consistency this year at all.
I agree, and I think that's what we want across the board. And as you say, we don't always get it.
Never get it.
Yes. Now, the Giants. No Cameron, no Mumford.
And you know what? In a funny way, as I love Jeremy Cameron, I like them playing their tall forward line, but the way they're going at the moment, both outs are going to help them in my opinion.
So would you bring Dawson Simpson in or would you ruck Rory Lobb?
No, I wouldn't. I would bring Dawson Simpson into the 25 if maybe as insurance if West Coast thinks about Nick Natting to hit their 25. But I would get away if it's Vardy and Petrie, I would go with Rory Lobb in the ruck and I'd bring in maybe a Devon Smith and
Well, come on, you've been advocating Stevie J for a month
no,
now.
No, and Stevie J. I would definitely bring Stevie J in.
So he plays, yeah.
Yeah, look, he's still, yes, he's not as quick as he was. His form hasn't been great, but he loves the smell of September grass. And he's still got a bag of tricks that's deeper than any magician in Vegas. So I would suggest that you'd have him there. Look, they weren't flash at all. One goal in the first half against Adelaide. And actually, if you look at the stats of that game, matched them for inside 50s, matched them for contested ball, actually beat them for contested possession and uncontested possession and still managed to lose by six goals. So they need there's this disconnect we've talked about between the lines and they need to do something. And I think it may help them having a smaller forward line that puts a bit of tackle pressure on and someone there who just is going to cause headaches for the opposition, and that's Stevie J.
Yeah, no, I think let's not kid ourselves. Run is going to get them this win if they beat West Coast on Saturday.
Yep.
And I agree, smaller and quicker is a better way to go. And even if West Coast does toy with the idea of Nick Natanui playing, which I think they'd be crazy to do, because I think Nick Nat would be exhausted at the 20-minute mark of the first quarter.
But right at the moment, it's still putting the seed of doubt into the opposition, which is what it's all about.
I think that's
opinion.
A seed of doubt they'd be happy to have.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
because AFL clubs know how hard it is to prepare players for home and away games, let alone for an AFL final. And I think they would look at the possible of inclusion of Nick Natanui and they'd be saying, well, let's hope they do play him.
Mm.
Because they'll be 21 fit men after 15 minutes of the first quarter.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break to talk about the West Australian app. It's available for free on iTunes and Google Play. The new app brings you comprehensive coverage of news, sport, business and opinion in a fast, easy-to-read format direct to your smartphone or tablet. If it's happening here in the West, it's here in the West Australian app. And I've got one on my phone, Quarters, which I should have because I work there.
So have I.
Good. Let's get some questions out of the way. And I know the bloke that's asking this, and you're going to love this. From Corbin in Sydney, from the ABC, is Quarters upset he can't tip against Essendon this week?
See, unfair. That's unfair. But the answer is yes, I am. I won't say it was porno filth last week, but it was pretty close.
How are the Bombers going? How do you rate their season?
I rate their season very well. It was a shock. It wasn't a great exit last weekend, but I think they did play the side I think will win the flag at the peak of their form. So I think what we found out about Essendon last week is they run one way very well. When it's not on their terms, it goes horribly wrong. That's what happened at the weekend. They need to address that, get some run the other way. But I think if you look at where they'd come from and what they achieved, that's a pretty good effort and full credit to John Worsfold and the players for that.
I agree with that. And one thing I'll also give Essendon an enormous amount of credit for, I think in the end, I doubt that Joe Watson was in Essendon's best 22 to go against other quick midfields playing in finals. But I think there was a recognition at the club that given everything that had happened, Joe Watson had earned a spot in their team, and he'd earned that in
and I think
to his career.
In 10 years' time, when Job's long retired, he'll probably, if he hadn't played this year, because he was it was very much a 50-50 call whether he played or not, and I think he would look back and say, I'm glad I played, just to see what would happen. And we did see some glimpses of Job at his best this year, but he wasn't the player he was.
He struggled towards the end of the
game. The game just went past him. So.
And I'm pleased that he got to go out with his head up.
Yeah, well done.
And I'm pleased that the club said, you know what, we're doing this. Joe Watson is going to go out as an AFL player. He's not going to go out running around in the Magoos.
Yep.
And I think that was fantastic, a fantastic gesture by Essendon. And now, after getting themselves back into finals, the Bombers can move further onwards and further upwards.
They can, but they're out of it, so bad luck.
TMT asks, how is Freo going to get a contracted Nathan Wilson?
It'll be tough. I guess what? He's out of contract at the end of the year. I guess it'll...
No, he's out of contract at the end of next year.
Oh, next year. Yes. So. Okay. Okay. So I'm not sure what they can do. Well, Freo doesn't have a second round pick. They're not going to give away number five. So I'm just not sure what they're going to do.
He won't be number five. But what may happen at GWS is that
Josh Kelly
will take a lot of money. And they've just re-signed Lachie Whitfield today, and you can guarantee that that's taken a fair whack of money. Jacob Hopper, I think, re-signed last week. You can guarantee that they paid a reasonable amount for him, given the big raps on him. So it may get to a point where GWS looks at their salary cap and they say, you know what, we've paid a lot of money, there's not a lot of room here, and we may be able to shift Nathan Wilson now and get a better trade value for him now and get some money off our books. So that's in answer to the question, the person who asked the question, that is how they would get him. It's a case of what the price would be. And I think you're right. At the moment, right now, pick five is too high, a price to pay for Nathan Wilson, and Fremantle's next pick in the draft at the moment, which is around pick 40, that's too low.
So they'll get to manoeuvre something in the middle. And look, he fits their profile because he's a Peel boy, so he's a local boy who'd be coming back. And running back who can play forward too, so I would definitely have a crack at him if they can get it on.
So if you look at their options, Harley Bellick obviously will be making his way back to Melbourne.
Yep.
Harley could be worth a mid second round pick, or he might be an early third round pick.
I would say early third.
And the other one, which is interesting, I reckon, Quarters, is Hayden Crozier. So we had a question asker last week who wanted to know if Crozier had been signed, because there were noises going around that he was about to be signed. He hasn't been signed yet. So that tells me that either he's having second thoughts about staying, or the club is thinking, well, maybe Hayden Crozier goes on the table and we try and get ourselves back into the second round. Or it's a combination of both of those things, which is probably the most likely reality, is that both club and player are weighing up their future. Blair asks, any truth to the rumour that Alex Fasolo is looking to return to WA?
Well, I've heard this one. I've heard it. And if he is, then you would have a crack, I would suggest. Good player.
So which club is Alex Fasolo worth more to? Is he worth more to West Coast? To a probably
West Coast.
West Coast more than Freo?
I think so. I think they need his type. Forward. Clever. Very clever forward too. I think he would. If I was West Coast, I'd be very interested in that speculation.
Okay, so East Fremantle boy. I don't know whether he has any ties to Fremantle. And clearly, if you want to come home, and Alex obviously had some mental health issues in the middle of this season.
Finished the year off okay, though, didn't he?
He did. He's a very talented player, Alex Fasolo. But I suspect there might be a bit of a bidding war for Alex Fasolo if he comes on the market.
Yep.
Gil asks, is Oscar Allen a possibility for the Dockers' number five draft pick?
They'll probably go for height, won't they?
Oscar Allen's he's 191 with long arms.
Yeah.
So that probably makes him a Jack Darling type, I would think. And I would think number five pick is too high for Oscar Allen, even though he won the Lark Medal at the 18s championship.
Haven't been too many Lark medalists who haven't gone on.
Yeah, no, there's been some good ones. I suspect, though, that Oscar is more likely somewhere between pick 10 and 25 in this draft. The first WA kid, I reckon, to be taken will be Ella Norton.
Pity we didn't see him at the weekend.
Yeah.
He was dropped.
I know.
To make way for some Freo players. Ironic, that one, isn't it?
Well, it's not really ironic. It
might be playing with them next year.
It happens at every club, doesn't it?
Yeah, well. You know what I'm saying about the Peel situation, though?
Well, I think there's going to be a dramatic shift in that situation at the end of the year. That's my tip on that. So Aaron Norton, I think, will be the first WA player taken in the draft. The other kid I saw, Quarters, play a couple of weeks ago is Sam Taylor from Swan Districts.
Yep.
Tall defender, and he is a very, very good player as well. So don't be surprised if he bobs up around about the same place in the draft as an Oscar Allen and maybe even an Aaron Norton. Damien, who tends to be out in front of the ball a fair bit with his questions, I reckon. Should the Dockers be worried that Matt Taberner has delayed contract talks?
Well, they possibly should, but they might be privy to that.
This
could fit into the basket that we've just been talking about as well.
Yep.
In their manoeuvring to perhaps get some trades done. So, you know, my thoughts on that. I should think they should keep Taberner if they can.
I think you've got to give Tabernan another 12 months. But that said, it depends on what you can get for him, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If you think another club who's desperate for a tall forward, That would be Fremantle.
Well, anyone bar the top 2 or 3% of your club are tradable, really,
yeah,
in this day and age. So he's definitely tradable. I just wouldn't, but unless something jumps out, smacks you between the eyes, I wouldn't.
Exactly. I think if the deal is right, you do it, and if it's not, you go another 12 months with Matt Taberner. Leanne asks, will Nick Nat be named for West Coast Quarters?
Possibly in the 25, but interesting, a Perth Now poll, 53% say no, don't do it, too risky. 41% say yes, but I don't think there's too much risk involved. Is there? He's right. It's just match fitness.
Medically cleared, match fitness to me would be the big risk. Yeah. I mean, Nick Nat knew he could do his knee this weekend against GWS, and he could do it in round one next year.
Or he could do it round 15 next year. Let's hope that doesn't happen, by the way. But
the worry would be Nick Natanui at the 20-minute mark of the first quarter, yeah, out of gas, and West Coast effectively down to 21 fit men in a final.
Or you swing him on late and he just does those magic things. But I wouldn't play him. That's just my opinion. I've said that all along. I'd wait till round one next year, get another good pre-season into him, and round one next year.
Sports Central asks, what are your thoughts on Nigel Lappin's idea of first-year players getting four-year contracts in a bid to encourage loyalty?
Love it. Love it. I think that clubs that invest in players should get the return there at least for 4 years. And I think 4 years too, it often takes players longer really to get to acclimatise to AFL. So I like that idea.
And it would give, I guess, a rebuild at a club that finds itself down the bottom. Yep. It would give that club a chance for that rebuild to take root, yep, and for the player to be able to see the light,
yep,
at the end of the tunnel and sort of think, well, if I want to be involved in a successful team, I may be just as well advised to stay put as opposed to try and move on and find football somewhere else. And I think that would definitely apply to the clubs in the northern states at the moment, Quarters,
yeah,
because obviously Gold Coast and Brisbane remain vulnerable.
Yeah, I see Lynch, there's spec over Lynch again now too. So,
well, that'll go on for the next 12 months, won't it? Mind you, it's going to have to take a hell of a trade deal to get Tom Lynch away from anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And if I was the AFL, I'd be strongly tempted. I know that people don't like the idea of ambassadorships, but if I was the AFL,
he'll get one.
I'd be strongly tempted to make sure that Tom Lynch had a deal that kept him.
Well, Gill's already forecast that. No, he'll get one. He's getting an ambassador. So finals, mate, week two of the finals, Friday night at the MCG. Does Geelong go out in straight sets against a all-conquering Sydney?
Well, the recent form between the two teams suggests they do, doesn't it? And I do think that this had a factor in Joel Selwood being picked to play last week,
yep,
rather than being left the extra week. I think he should have been left the extra week. I think they thought that maybe if they could squeeze past Richmond, they could avoid Sydney, and now they're confronted with their demons.
Three in a row, Sydney, five of the last six against Geelong, and I think the last three they've averaged 40-point victories. So it's pretty significant. And last time they played, I think there was no Dangerfield and no Kennedy.
Yeah.
But look, I'm prepared to, I think Sydney will win this one. I think Geelong's out in straight sets. A couple of little side plots. I think it's Buddy's last tussle with Tom Lonergan.
Yep.
And hasn't that been a beauty over the years?
He's done very well on Buddy, Tommy Lonergan.
Yeah, he does. He has done very well. And he's done very well full stop, given what he's been through. Mm-hmm. And also Jared McVay's 300th game. So a couple of sidelights there. Joel Selwood will be better. You'd think,
well, he might be worse, Quarters.
Yeah, well, I don't think so. And I made this point last week. I'd still have a Joel Selwood at 50%. I just think he's such a terrific player. Guthrie's a big out. Kola Dashney's a big out. I can't see Geelong rebounding from that. I think Sydney wins this by a similar margin to what they've been averaging, to be quite honest.
I'm not going to tip a margin, but I think Sydney go in as the favourites here, and I think we're headed towards a blockbuster prelim in Adelaide in the second last week of the season.
Yep. They've got very few injuries, Sydney, too.
Yeah.
Kicking goals from everywhere, and you can argue Adelaide or Sydney as the two best balanced sides in it now. I think it's Sydney. It's a moot point, but I think Adelaide's beautifully balanced side. I think Sydney is too, though, and they've done nothing wrong since round six.
Yeah, well, I've got to make sure they get over Geelong before they get to face the Crows.
Of course they do.
But certainly Sydney looks to be the form team in the competition at the moment.
Chris Scott finals records looking a bit shaky too. I think it's 2-9, and it would have been 1-10 had Hawthorn not kicked straight or kick straight at the end of last year's final series. So
this annoys me because I think Geelong's finals record is a reflection of where the team is at.
Yep.
I mean, Chris Scott has taken this team to flags. He's kept them in contention. They have a very good home ground advantage quarters when they because they play those games at Cadinia Park, which is that's a very distinct home ground advantage, and they tend to win them all. And that maybe flatters them a little bit in terms of their home and away performance. But
there's no doubt they did well to finish, you know, in the top four.
I think they've been a well-run, well-managed, well-coached club. And sometimes those clubs get into finals that they're actually, in terms of their playing talent, they're not entitled to win. And that may be where Geelong is at the moment.
Tell you what, there's a lot of ill feeling from Geelong supporters about that finals record.
Yeah, spoilt brats.
Yeah, you're probably right there.
I was on a radio show on the ABC on Saturday morning, and we had a West Coast supporter ring up and talk about their horrible, underwhelming year. And I made the comment
not
that...
Not now, it's not.
Well, I made the comment that only a West Coast supporter could make that comment when they were about to play a final that evening. And I think there are supporters of certain clubs that are incredibly spoilt and forget how spoilt they are. And Geelong would be one. Hawthorn would be one.
Oh, that's unfair.
West Coast would be one. And Sydney would be one. Well, if you're a supporter of one of those clubs, shut up. You've been very, very spoilt.
I'm not complaining.
I know, you know. I'm talking about some of your cohorts, mate, not you yourself.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right, so on to Spotless Stadium on Saturday night. We both agree that Sydney will win on Friday night.
Yes, we do. And I also think GWS will win this one. I think it's a bridge too far for West Coast, given their lead-up, the fact they played extra time last Saturday night. What's going to be really interesting is to see what they do at the selection table, because I'd be loath to break up that back line, which has been formidable for them, but they might have to. I mean, it's that call. Do you stick with the team that has done the job for you, knowing that they're going to run out of legs? And
I wouldn't be making changes in the back half. Yeah. I think my changes at West Coast would be around the middle and forward.
So you've got Wellingham in?
I think there's four or five players, and I think two or three of them have to come in. So the four or five are Josh Hill, Will Schofield, Sharad Wellingham.
Marston.
Chris Marston. Yep. And probably Jackson Nelson.
So the outs, there's three or four outs.
Two or three. I think two or three.
Okay, and it's only because of the lead-in.
That's right. Yeah. Well, Partington struggled the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, he did. So Partington can come out.
So I think he's one of the ones that come out. Lacroix, he'd be one of the ones I'd be looking at.
Yep.
And then there's others, you know, like Mark Hutchings may get a role as a run with, but if he doesn't, they're going to need run. So they're going to need maybe a Marston gives them more run than, say,
there's the other point. Hutchings went to Shields last time. They didn't do a run with Kelly. What do they do this time? They go to Kelly because Kelly, 43 touches in round 22.
Everyone tags Sheila. That's the interesting thing. All clubs, when they play GWS, I think they regard Sheila as gettable, particularly because he's got the bad shoulders at the moment.
And Kelly's not gettable.
So
well, he was really the difference last time, wasn't he? Because it was level pegging at three-quarter time at Spotless in round 22.
Yeah.
And Kelly was magnificent throughout, but particularly in the last quarter.
Well, what they probably should do is send Hutchings to Dylan Scheel and get Josh Kennedy to run through Kelly again. That's what happened late in the game last time.
Yeah.
I tend to agree with you in terms of GWS winning this game. I think I didn't like what I saw of GWS last week, but I think if they turn up even at 90 to 95%, I think they have a significant competitive advantage just in the breaks between the games.
Yeah.
They're a 9-day break with one travel, and West Coast are a 7-day break with two travels 3 days apart.
What worries me about GWS is they've averaged 54 points the last 2 weeks, and I think they've only hit the triple figures once in the last 10 weeks. So we've known them to be a big high-scoring side, and it just hasn't been happening for them.
I think the last 2 weeks, though, one of them is at Cadinia Park, which is a long, narrow ground, and it's hard for opposition teams to master. And the other one was in greasy conditions at Adelaide Oval. Again, hard conditions for visiting teams to master.
10 weeks without triple figures is a big statement about them at the moment.
And no Jeremy Cameron, so their scoring potential is down.
What do they do? Scully to Gaff?
But probably head-to-head.
Yeah, okay.
Not tag. I think one will run one way. They'll shake hands at the beginning and they'll shake hands at the end.
And what about, what do they do with McGovern perhaps? Himmelberg perhaps goes in as playing a negative role?
I think you need a defensive forward on McGovern. And I think Yeo probably goes to Toby Green, as we flagged in the newspaper today.
Which was an interesting battle last time too. That was one of the great subplots.
An absolute highlight of that game.
So to me, Toby Green to me is the most important player in that side.
The other thing I would be doing, Quarters, if I was Leon Cameron, I would be trying to get Kelly and Scheel in head-to-heads against Pritis and Mitchell for obvious reasons.
I'm sure he'll be trying to. And just on that, we've spoken about, look, GWS have been, so West Coast Eagles, firstly, this is a winning year for them, in my opinion. 2 weeks ago, they weren't even playing finals. They've won a final.
Yeah.
So they're really, there's not a lot of pressure on the Eagles. They'll hate me saying that, but I don't think there is. I think they've had a tick already. I'd give them a B for the season right now. Okay. Yeah. GWS, we've been talking about them for 3-4 years now as probably going to win the flag, and it hasn't happened yet. And I'm just, there's a bit of pressure on them now. Straight sets would be horrendous for them.
I think that, I think we've only been talking about them as
2014, they were on top of the ladder after about 6 rounds, I'm pretty sure, and we were talking them up then.
I've only regarded GWS as in the mix last year and this year. So, what I would say is that it's not going to be a good year if GWS play in a prelim last year and they go out in straight sets this year. So their job's to win a final. I think if you win a final, you know, what happens next week happens. They get Richmond at the MCG. Richmond, that's not an unwinnable game for them. I mean, Richmond would start favourites, but, straight sets is bad. It's not good for
anything. One thing's for certain, the Eagles are going to have to jump them because, as we said earlier in the week, they've still been fading out of games.
Yep.
The fact is they kicked they were massively outscored in the second half.
Well, a 31-point lead became a 13-point deficit just before halftime in extra time.
And even in extra time, it was 6 scoring shots to 3. It's just that the Eagles nailed theirs.
Yeah.
So I think that's a concern. They need to be well up at three-quarter time.
Yeah, I would agree with that. What's your margin in this if we're both thinking that GWS win?
I'm giving about 24 points, I reckon.
Yeah, I reckon it might be closer. I think somewhere between 15 and 20.
Yep.
I think West Coast will give a pretty good account of themselves, and they may even be in front at halftime, but I think the extra legs and the fresher bodies are going
to
tell.
To be honest, I think 24 wouldn't be the end of the world. I think it'd be a pretty good exit.
Yeah, I agree. And I think West Coast will take momentum in because, as you say, with 5 minutes to go in the game against Melbourne, they weren't playing finals.
Yep.
And now they're in the top six. So they will play with a fair degree of freedom. But that said, if you look at the competitive advantage in the preparation, it definitely lies with GWS.
Yep. Well, there'll be one certainty from the weekend. There'll be some controversy we'll be talking about next Monday. I guarantee you.
Lord help us. All right. Well, thank you for joining us today. We'll be back on Monday to dissect those controversies coming out of the second weekend of finals. Don't forget also there's a weekend of waffle finals, the preliminary final, of course, between Subiaco and South Fremantle to see who goes forward to play Peel Thunder in what is likely to be a controversial Australian rules farewell to Subiaco Oval or Domain Stadium as we know at Quarters. And I think there'll be some significant player rule changes in the waffle at the end of the year as a result of what we've seen in this final series.
Let's hope so.
Keep following your football in the game lift out in the West Australian, the pre-game on Friday, and obviously the game lift out on Monday, where you'll get the complete wash up of the weekend's event. Also, get your footy fix out of the Weekend West on Saturday. The Sunday Times on Sunday will have complete coverage of the West Coast Eagles GWS clash at Spotless Stadium on Saturday night. And of course, up to the minute coverage of all AFL football and waffle football on thewest.com.au and perthnow.com.au, and myself and the anti-Essendon hating Glenn Quartermain.
Oh, no, it's like Woodstock over here. I don't hate them at all.
We'll be back on Monday to talk to you again. Thank you.
The Game AFL podcast is brought to you by the West Australian and the Sunday Times, where the footy never stops. Watch the best videos and stay on the ball with breaking news and expert analysis at thewest.com.au and perthnow.com.au. This has been the game.